Hi, and welcome to the Canvas Church Podcast, where you can listen to our weekly sermons. Thanks for joining us on this journey as we look to God's Word to mold us into people becoming the church.
Well, good morning, Canvas Church. Good to see you all here today. I hope you're having a fabulous weekend so far. Last week, Heidi and I weren't here, and we did miss you. However, we were happy we weren't here. We were in a beautifully sunny place celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. Come on. I know some of you are thinking there's no way you could have been married 25 years. And for you, I say thank you. It's true. 25 years, got married at 20. I was 20. She was 18 years old. Don't recommend it to anybody, but so glad we did it when we did. And we have had 25 wonderful years of marriage, and we got to celebrate it on the sunny beaches of Hawaii, and it was wonderful. And then we got back to Spokane. I felt like you guys were going to do something about this for us before we got back, but apparently not. No, it's really good to be home. Always fun to be away and relax and enjoy each other's company. You know, when we got married at 20 and 18, we had no idea that February was a great time to get married because it allows you to get away to somewhere warm in the middle of a winter like this. But yeah, we just slow pace, just relaxed and enjoyed ourselves. And it was a wonderful time, but super excited to be back this morning. Looking forward to jumping into God's Word with you as we continue through our series, Unleashed. But before we get to that, I just want to bring to your attention our annual membership meeting that's coming up next weekend, next Sunday. Immediately following the gathering, we'll be having our annual membership meeting. Now, our annual membership meeting, it's available for anybody to attend. All of you who call Canvas your home, I would encourage you to attend, come out and be a part of our annual membership meeting. Those of you who are members of Canvas Church, just meaning you've decided to jump all in partnership with us and you are an official member of Canvas Church, we expect you to be there because these are important meetings where we help shape the future and the direction of Canvas Church. So plan on being out next weekend, March 12th on Sunday, immediately following the gathering. Two orders of business really on the calendar that we're going to take care of next Sunday. One is to ratify two deacons. We have two deacons coming off of the board and we have two deacons coming onto the board. And it's our job as a church membership to ratify those two deacons. The two deacons that are up for ratification are Dave Johnson and Jared Staples. There should be a slip inside of your bulletin. If not, I know there's some on the information table. Saw them there this morning. And I just wanted to give you just a real quick overview on what that process looks like, because I think it's helpful for you to know, like, how do deacons become deacons at Canvas Church? Well, our constitution and bylaws, they require the board to assemble a deacon nomination team. Deacon nomination team is made up of three board members and four congregational members. Four congregational members, it's a diverse subsection of the church. We try to go male, female, old, young, just a nice wide variety. So we have a really good understanding of the culture of our church and who's our church and who's going to best serve in these roles. And so we get together. We also give an opportunity for everybody that's a part of Canvas Church to put your own nominations and your own suggestions forward, and we weigh those. And Deacon Nomination Team, we bring four suggestions of our own to the table, and then we just walk through each and every suggestion. We tally them up. We prioritize the list, bring that list back to the official board. The official board ratifies the deacon nominations, like their suggestions, and then put forward a couple of names for a couple of spots. Some years we have three people who come off the deacon team, and some years we have two people. And this year it's two people, so we have two names presented to the congregation to ratify as new deacons to serve in this role. other order of business this year is I've come to the end of my first term as the lead pastor at Canvas Church. And so our constitution and bylaws state that the first term is 3 years. So you guys voted me in as your lead pastor 3 years ago. I can't believe it's been 3 years already. And so now up for another vote. And so this is a vote of confidence for me as your lead pastor. And I just hold that so loosely before the Lord. I just say, God, if you want me to keep serving in this role, I will keep doing that as long as you call me to it. And as soon as you want me to step out of this role, make it loud and clear, and I will gracefully do that. And this is just an opportunity for the Lord to confirm that he's called me into this position, or he's called me to do something else. And so hold it very loosely. But it is an opportunity for us as a church voting membership to ratify me as your lead pastor. And then the second term is an undetermined length of time. It's from here until the Lord decides that he wants me to do something else. So that is part of our order of business coming up next Sunday. And I'll just give a plug for those of you who call Canvas your home church. Like, this is where you come. This is where you worship. We are your people and you are our people. And you're not yet an official member of Canvas. It's a great opportunity for you to partner with us in a deeper way. So I just encourage you. Now, we can't make any new members at this point before the annual membership meeting, but I would encourage you to consider becoming an official member of Canvas and help shape the culture and direction of our church. Cool? Cool. All right. Well, I've been waiting to jump into part 19 of Unleashed, the Spirit-Empowered Church. And I got to tell you, this is a little bit weird having a microphone in my hand because, as you know, if you're around here, I talk with my hands a lot. So this hand is going to be tired by the end of this message. I go all different directions. So thankful for our tech team. They recognize that the mic we've been using, that thing is on the fritz. They've done everything they can this side of burying that thing and getting a new one to try to make it work. And it's just not working. So we tossed it aside using this morning. So one hand is just going to be real busy. So just hang on. This morning's message is entitled Your Platform. Your platform. Now, building a brand seems to be the new craze, doesn't it? Like, building a brand is such an important part of our culture. In fact, companies, they no longer want to be known as companies. They want to be known as a brand, you know? Like, they don't care. Companies produce products. Brands, they create culture, and they are so, like, committed to building their brand. Their brand means everything. In the professional sports arena, players, they're more committed now, it seems, to their particular personal brand than they are even to the teams that they play on. Like, sports players, they're all about building their own brand. Now, Michael Jordan, back in the mid-90s, he's the one that paved the way for professional athletes to build a brand. Building a brand is just like, it's this new craze. And social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, they've created the opportunity for any common, ordinary folk, just like you and I, to build a platform, to become influencers in our society. It's pretty amazing. These influencers, they get companies that contract them to wear their product, peddle their product, get their product out in front of all of their viewers, whoever likes them or subscribes to them, get the product out because you can influence the culture. Everybody based on social media has the ability to build a platform or a brand, just common, ordinary people. For example, Cristiano Ronaldo, professional footballer, not American football. It's what we call soccer. 539 million followers on Instagram. I mean, the fact that a soccer player could accumulate that many, it just goes to prove you that anybody can do this. Just kidding, soccer players, I know, it's a low-hanging fruit, I'm sorry. Or how about this guy called, his YouTube name is Mr. Beast. I don't know where he got this name from, but he's been around for a while. He's got a ton of followers, makes a ton of money on his videos. He's just an ordinary boy from Wichita, Kansas. That's it. Started making videos of himself. Started giving away money. Started doing these crazy, extravagant challenges where people would count to 100,000 and they'd video the whole thing, 44 hours to count to 100,000, and they would video it, and then people would watch it. How many of you gonna carve out 44 hours to watch somebody else count to 100,000? Count me out, but there's a lot of people who did. Millions of people who watched this video and then fill swimming pools with crazy things and people die. Like, it's insane stuff. And this is just a normal Joe, just an ordinary guy from Wichita, Kansas, 24 years old. Like, he wasn't even born when Heidi and I got married. It's crazy. And he's made more already than I'll probably ever make in my whole life because he has this platform. And it's easy in a society like ours to fixate on other people's platforms. To think to ourselves, like, if I only had that influence, or if I had that influence, then I would be able to. Like, we fixate on other people's platforms and we neglect the platform that we currently have. And what I want you to understand this morning is you have a platform. You are an influencer. And some of the students are like, yeah, I've been wanting to be an influencer my whole life, and I'm an influencer. Everybody in this room, everybody listening online this morning, you are an influencer. You have a platform. And here's the reality behind that is this, is that we need to steward our platforms well. Stewarding our platform should be our priority. That's the sentence that I hope rolls around in your brain all week long and helps you recognize your normal everyday life when approached with this understanding and this reality, it could change your everyday life. When you walk into your everyday, ordinary life recognizing that stewarding your platform should be your priority, it will change the way you live your life. It will change the way you do business. It will change the way you interact with your family. It'll change the way you interact with your neighbors, your coworkers. Like, it will change the way you do life across the board if you decide to steward your platform well, if you make it a priority. And there's always a tendency when we get to this stage, like we're 19 weeks into this series called Unleashed. And you come this far into a book and there's a tendency for things to become redundant, right? It's like, man, sometimes I feel like we've heard the same message over and over and over again. Now, we've done our due diligence to try to help us understand this from different angles and in different points of view. But here's the thing that I love about going through the books of the Bible is it requires us to take time and talk about what Scripture talks about. So what you could get wrapped up in one message or a couple of messages, when you spend time in a whole book, it forces you to come back to the same thing over and over again. One word that has encompassed this whole book of Acts is this word witness. Brandon last week did a fabulous job, got to listen to it on podcast, thankful for podcasts and the ability to watch on YouTube, like on demand. It's so wonderful. So I got to throw it in and listen to how Brandon communicated last week. Super thankful for him and his competency to be able to teach God's word. And he talked so much about being a witness. And this is one word that's just, it's strung all throughout the book of Acts. You can't get away from it. And this is what I would encourage you, is if at this point in our series this starts to be redundant, it's on purpose. Lean into it. The author of Acts, Luke, he stays on this theme all the way through because it is so important. And when we just hop, skip, and jump around the scriptures, we lose the importance of things that are repeated over and over and over again. So if this morning's message seems a bit redundant to you, good. I'm glad. But don't let the redundancy of it make you tune out and start thinking about what's for lunch later. That you lean into it and that you really start to begin to ask questions like, what is my platform and how can I make stewarding it a priority? We're going to be in Acts chapter 24 and 25 today. And as you turn there, let me catch you up to speed on what's going on. Paul, we see, he is faithful to use his platform no matter where he finds himself. Like, he is so faithful to use whatever platform is given him to extend the gospel reach. It's incredible. And in chapter 24, we're picking up where Brandon left off last week. Paul is in Caesarea. He's waiting to be tried once again in front of a court. And he's waiting to be put in front of Felix, the governor. Felix, the governor. Paul has appealed so that he could go to Felix, the governor, and be tried there. And Felix is waiting to try him. And Felix invited Ananias, the high priest, and all of the other officials to come and to present their case of what Paul has done wrong. So, Ananias, he brings a group of people with him, some elders of the church, elders of Jerusalem. He brings them with him, and he brings this lawyer or an orator, somebody who's able to communicate well, brings him. His name's Tertullus, and they're there to present their case to the governor, Felix. And then in verses 2 and 3, you see that Tertullus, he is a very great orator because he just lays on the flattery to the governor Felix. Like, he just laying it on. And all of the flattery that he lays on, it's all false because Felix is an awful governor. He's corrupt. He's doing things wrong. Like, things are falling apart. We're going to find here in chapter 25 that he actually gets replaced because he's such an awful governor. And he leaves a bunch of stuff undone when he gets replaced. Not only does Tertullus lay on false flattery, he also lays on false accusations against Paul, trying to berate his character, trying to say that he's a rioter, stirs up trouble wherever he goes, and that he is speaking against the temple of God. So all of these false accusations he brings forward. And Felix finally says, I want Paul to speak. It's Paul's turn to speak. So we pick up the story in verse 10. This is what it says. Then the governor motioned for Paul to speak. Paul said, I know, sir, that you have been a judge of Jewish affairs for many years. So I gladly present my defense before you. I love Paul's introduction here. It's respectful and accurate. He does not lay on any flattery. He's not trying to butter up Felix by all of these false things that Felix has done. Felix knows who he is. He knows that he is not a good governor. He knows that he is corrupt. He knows he's not doing a good job. So I think that this actually bodes well for Paul, just to be really brutally honest and respectful at the same time. Hey, you've served over Jewish affairs for a long time. I gladly present my case before you. That's all Paul says. So, and then he goes on to say, you can quickly discover that I arrived in Jerusalem no more than 12 days ago to worship at the temple. My accusers never found me arguing with anyone in the temple, nor stirring up a riot in any synagogue, nor on the streets of the city. These men cannot prove the things they accuse me of doing. But I admit that I follow the way. The way is what the church was called in the early days. The way, likely stemming out of Jesus' words, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So as the disciples of Jesus radically followed Jesus's footsteps, they began to be called the way because they were following the way that Jesus paved for people to have relationship with God the Father. So Paul says, I follow the way, which they call a cult. I worship the God of our ancestors, and I firmly believe the Jewish law and everything written in the prophets. I have the same hope in God that these men have, that he will raise both the righteous and the unrighteous. Because of this, I always try to maintain a clear conscience before God and all the people. After several years away, I returned to Jerusalem with money to aid my people and to offer sacrifices to God. My accusers saw me in the temple as I was completing a purification ceremony. There was no crowd around me and no rioting, but some Jews from the province of Asia were there. and they ought to be here to bring charges if they have anything against me. So what Paul's saying is those who are bringing charges against me, they weren't even around. Like they had no part of this. There was a group of Jews that were there, and the Jews that were there, they're not currently here. If they had a problem with what I was doing then, they should be here now leveling accusations rather than these jokers that are leveling false accusations against me. That's what Paul's saying. Ask these men here what crime the Jewish council found me guilty of. Except for the one time I shouted out, I am on trial before you today because I believe in the resurrection of the dead. Paul is staking his claim, as he has since the beginning of his ministry, on the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I should say on the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Paul has not budged on this point since his road to Damascus experience, where he surrendered his life to Jesus in a life transformational way. He has been resolute in this reality. There was a man named Jesus who lived, who died, who was buried, and who came back to life. And that Jesus is the Jesus who radically changed his life and who radically changed my life as well. So Paul is resolute in this reality. And at this point, the scriptures tell us that Felix decides to put this on pause. He wants to put this on hold. He's familiar with Jewish customs and religions and traditions, and he doesn't want to go any further. He just wants to pause the conversation so he has Paul locked up again, but with some freedom. Give him some freedom. Let his friends join him and interact with him. But nonetheless, Paul is still in prison. And then in verse 24, we pick it up. It says, a few days later, Felix came back with his wife, Drusilla, who was Jewish, sending for Paul. They listened as he told them about faith in Christ Jesus, as he reasoned with them about righteousness and self-control and the coming day of judgment. Felix became frightened. Let's let that sit in for a second. Paul is sitting before the governor and his wife in a private meeting, reasoning with them about the scriptures and who Jesus is and about righteousness and about self-control. Felix lacks all of these things. And when Paul gets to this judgment piece, he becomes frightened. He freaks out. He doesn't know what to do with himself. The reality is the scriptures are clear. Judgment is coming, and anybody who stands outside of relationship with Jesus Christ stands in judgment already. The scriptures tell us you stand condemned currently if you have not surrendered your life to Jesus Christ. In fact, maybe some of you here today, or those of you listening online, you fit that bill. You are currently standing in that position outside of relationship with Jesus Christ. The scriptures are clear, and we need to be clear with the scriptures that the Bible says judgment is coming someday. And when it comes, if you stand outside of faith in Jesus Christ, you will spend eternity separated from God the Father. This freaked Felix out. It should freak us out today, but grateful that Jesus did live. He did die. He did come back to life. So faith in him gets us in relationship with the Father that will extend out through eternity. And that invitation is open to everybody. It's open to everybody. So this morning, if you currently stand outside, it's an invitation to step inside, to come into relationship, to bow your knee, to surrender your life, all of the things that Jacob talked about as we celebrated communion. That's why Jesus came. That's why he died, to offer a relationship to anybody who would bow their knee and surrender their lives to him. So Felix gets freaked out. He says, go away for now. When it is more convenient, listen, it's never going to be more convenient to address things like righteousness, self-control, and judgment. Now is the time. It's always the time. So Felix says, when it's more convenient, I'll call for you again. He also hoped that Paul would bribe him, so he sent for him quite often and talked with him. I told you this guy was a scoundrel. Verse 27, after 2 years went by, 2 years. That's a long time. 630, it's a lot of days. 730 days. 730 days. My mind was just doing a thing like, don't try to do the math. And it was like, no, let's do it. I think we can do this. And I'm like, no, don't do it. And then I did it. Here we are. After 2 years went by this way, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. And because Felix wanted to gain favor with the Jewish people, he left Paul in prison. He could have released him. He could have let him go. As things transitioned, he knew that Paul was not guilty. He could have let him go. But because he cared more about public opinion than doing the right thing, he leaves Paul in prison and just says to himself, you know, Festus can figure this out when he gets into office. Festus gets into office. He's a better governor than Felix, and he gets right to work. He heads off to Jerusalem to meet with those people and just see how things are going over there. And the top order of business for the people in Jerusalem were, what are we going to do with Paul? He's been hanging out in prison for a long time. Are we going to take care of this or not? He should be executed by now. And Festus is like, hey, just calm down. I ain't bringing Paul back here. If you have something wrong with Paul, you go there. We'll try it over there when we get back to Caesarea. So that's what they do. They go back to Caesarea. Festus goes back to Caesarea, and he brings some from Jerusalem leaders with him, and they show up, and they put together the next day. They get into town. They land, they get right to work. Next day, they have a trial. Verse 8 says this, Paul denied the charges. So they leveled the same accusations, false accusations against Paul again. He said, Paul denies the charges. I am not guilty of any crime against the Jewish laws or the temple or the Roman government, he said. Then Festus, wanting to please the Jews, asked him, are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there? But Paul replied, no, this is the official Roman court, so I ought to be tried right here. You know very well I am not guilty of harming the Jews. If I have done something worthy of death, I don't refuse to die. But if I am innocent, no one has the right to turn me over to these men to kill me. I appeal to Caesar. Festus conferred with his advisors and then replied, very well, you have appealed to Caesar, and to Caesar you will go. Brandon last week did such a great job at talking about how once Paul appeals to the Roman government, he gets a protection put around him so that he is now safe. He's imprisoned, but he's safe. Safe to continue using the platform God has given him to communicate the gospel, to extend his gospel reach. So Festus says, you want to go to Caesar? Then Caesar, you will go. A few days, it takes a little while to get the, like, all of the things ready to go to Rome. So Paul's hanging out in prison still. And while he's hanging out in prison, King Agrippa arrived with his sister Bernice. They show up and Festus starts having a conversation. This is a couple of rulers. King, so think about it this way. You got the emperor of Rome, Caesar. You have the king, which is Agrippa. And then you have this governor. Like, that is the flow of leadership in the Roman Empire. King or Emperor Caesar, King Agrippa is underneath his leadership, and then the governor is underneath the king's leadership. So you have two of the highest officers in the Roman Empire, and they're sitting in a room, and they're talking about the life, death, and resurrection of King Jesus. It's incredible. That's exactly what he's like. The governor, Festus, is like, I don't understand why he's even here still. Like, besides the facts that Felix put him off on me, that's the only right reason why he's here. Like, he hasn't done anything wrong. He just keeps talking about this guy named Jesus who he claims lived, died, and came back to life. I don't know what to do with him. And King Agrippa's like, well, I'd like to hear what he has to say. So let's pick it up here. Verse 17 says this: when his accusers came here for the trial, so this is Festus talking to King Agrippa. When they came here for trial, I didn't delay. I called the case very next day and ordered Paul to be brought in. But the accusations made against him weren't of any crimes I expected. Instead, it was something about the religion and a dead man named Jesus, who Paul insists is alive. I was at a loss to know how to investigate these things, so I asked him whether he would be willing to stand trial on these charges in Jerusalem. But Paul appealed to have his case decided by the emperor, so I ordered that he be held in custody until I could arrange to send him to Caesar. I'd like to hear the man myself, Agrippa said. And Festus replied, you will, tomorrow. And then the text goes on, and Paul does get brought before King Agrippa and his sister, pseudo-wife, weird relationship that they have going on. He gets brought before them. He gets to begin to communicate the gospel message to this powerhouse audience. Paul could not have amassed an audience like this if he tried to. Like, if Paul was moving all of his pieces around the board to orchestrate, he, in a million years, could not have orchestrated this audience he has before him. He's got the king and the queen. He's got the governor. He's got the military tribunal. He's got leaders of the city. Like, this is a high horsepower group. I can only imagine as Paul gets ushered in as a prisoner, he's got to be thinking to himself, I cannot believe I'm standing before all these people. Normally, being put in prison would diminish your platform, not expand it. Generally, when you get locked up and put behind bars, your influence shrinks. It doesn't grow. Brandy did a great job talking about this last week and how Paul, sitting in prison, God comes to him in the middle of the night and says, don't be discouraged. One of the things that I think might have been discouraging Paul in that moment was this idea that maybe he thought his platform was shrinking and didn't realize that it was actually expanding. Like, God, I'm trying to do your work. Can I please just preach your message to people? And God's like, oh, if you only knew the platform that I was building for you. This platform of high horsepower, influencers, was going to serve to expand the gospel message around the known world. Paul's priority wasn't to expand his brand. It was to steward his platform. Whatever platform was before him, we see Paul stewarding it well. We've seen him as a faithful messenger, in conversation that took place in private homes. We've seen him in conversations that took place in private with people. We also seen him faithful with the message in the public square, like out in front of everybody in public discourse, in the synagogues and in the public square. Paul has been absolutely faithful to the message that God gave him to give to people. We've seen him in chains and we've seen him free. It's such a gift to the church to see Paul at all of these different arenas and the way that he managed his message all the way. He stayed faithful to stewarding his platform along the way. Stewarding it was a top priority. And his change did not serve to diminish or detour his message. In fact, just the opposite. They gave him a unique platform to share the gospel with more people. You too have a unique platform. Everyone in this room, you have a unique platform, and stewarding your platform should be your top priority. For some of you in this room, you're single right now. You're not married. You have a unique platform in your singleness to steward your platform well. You have a unique opportunity in your singleness to promote the gospel. Some of us in this room, most of us, in fact, are married. You have a unique opportunity in your married life to steward your platform well, to make it a priority. Some of us in this room, and most of us in this room, we're married with children. And that's a platform that's unique to us, and we have to steward that well. Some of us in this room, we're empty nesters at this point. We got kids, but they're moved out of the house. That's a unique opportunity. You've got to steward that well. Some of us in this room, we're employees, and that's a unique opportunity. Some of us are employers, unique opportunity. Some of us are students in here, unique opportunity. Just trying to help us understand, every one of us has a platform. And it's unique to us. We have a unique group of friends. We have a unique set of coworkers. We have a unique set of circumstances that is our platform in order to communicate the gospel to a lost world. And we must make it a priority to steward that platform well. I have three ways to steward your platform well this morning. We find it out of this text, but we can find it all the way through the scriptures as well. And the first way that you steward well your platform is you have to evaluate it. You have to evaluate your platform. What is your platform? I love last week where Brandon was talking about Paul. He's in the midst of a riot. He's getting beat up. If the Romans didn't come in and rescue him, they would have killed him on the spot. Carrying him up the stairs, literally, they cannot let him walk on his own because there's too much of a mob. They throw him on his shoulder and they're walking up the stairs. And Paul's like, hey, can I say something real quick? Commander's got to be like, are you kidding me right now? No, I got something to say. All right, go ahead and say it. Like Paul recognized, this is a unique opportunity, evaluating the platform that he had in the current moment allowed him to be a faithful messenger of the gospel. And if we're going to steward ours well, we have to evaluate the platform that we have. What platform do you currently have? What is your group of friends? Who are your people? Where are you investing in those who are not yet followers of Jesus? Maybe you're here and you've surrounded yourself only with followers of Christ. I would encourage you to find a way to break out of that and get around some other people who don't know Jesus yet. Who don't know Jesus. So evaluate your platform. What is my platform? Who are my people? How am I investing? How am I sharing the gospel with the platform that I have? Has your platform shifted? Is another question as you evaluate. Has your platform shifted? As you work your way through life, different seasons of life offer different platforms in those seasons. Evaluate it. What is your platform? And as you evaluate, another question is the message that I have being effectively communicated on the current platform that I have? Is the way I'm communicating the message should never change. The message is Jesus, life, death, and resurrection, just like Paul. That's the good news. But how we communicate it has to change. Are we being effective in communicating the gospel in a way that people can understand? We see Paul do that like geniusly throughout all of the book of Acts. Constantly recognizing the audience before him and communicating the message of Jesus Christ in a way that they could understand themselves. Once you evaluate your platform, once you evaluate your platform, then you've got to protect it. So this is the second way. The second way to steward your platform well is after you evaluate your platform, then you have to protect your platform. Paul's reputation served to strengthen his message. The Jews' reputation served to diminish theirs. Because every time Paul got in front of a court, the Jews would level false accusations and Paul would say they cannot prove what they are saying. What they are saying is not true. Paul's reputation, being faithful with his message, day in and day out, in every circumstance he was in, it served to strengthen the message that he was providing. And the same will be true for you, and the same will be true for me. The way we use our platform will either hurt or will help our gospel message going out into the world. The way that we live our lives, the way that we talk, the way that we act, our character day in and day out, people are watching the way we live our lives. And our character will serve to either benefit the gospel or it will serve to diminish our influence with the gospel in our community. No doubt about it. When Tertullus has Paul in front of Felix, or Festus rather, I get these guys confused. No, it was in front of Felix. When he has him in front of Felix, he makes this claim. He claims that Paul is being a ringleader of a cult known as the Nazarenes. And what he was doing was he was trying to make Paul, to associate Paul with a radicalized political group. He's lumping them in with this radicalized political group. He's saying he's a part of them. And Tertullus thinks that if I can associate Paul with this radicalized political group, then certainly Rome is going to do something about it. But Paul was not a part of a radicalized political party. No, Paul says, I am a part of the way, which they call a cult, but it's not a cult. See, the way was all about spiritual transformation. It was not about political subversion. Paul stayed radically committed to being about spiritual transformation, which that's what the way was about. Tertullus wanted to make him part of a radicalized political group. And the same accusation is being leveled against the church today. Today. As those who are outside of the faith look on at the church, they're saying they are more concerned about their political views than they are anything else. And we are in danger of losing our influence inside of our culture when political parties get our most attention. When they get our most attention. When we become more about political things than we do about the gospel of Jesus Christ, we are at risk of losing our influence in our culture. I absolutely 100% believe that we are part of two different kingdoms. We're part of a heavenly kingdom and we're part of an earthly kingdom. Heavenly kingdom comes first. The heavenly kingdom decides how we operate in our earthly kingdom. So I believe governments are set up by God, and he has given us, especially in the United States of America, the opportunity to cast our votes. And we should do that based on our heavenly kingdom. That our heavenly kingdom is the one that should help us make good decisions about how we vote for our government officials. But we should never get wrapped up in the politicalness of our time. Government is established by God. Politics are established by people. And the church is called to be good citizens, which means that we show up, we vote. We show up and we vote for things that matter. We show up and we do the things that God has called us to do, being good citizens. But let it be said of us when it comes to the church becoming too political is this: they cannot prove these things they accuse us of. I want to be radically committed to the gospel. I want that to shape the way I interact in my community and in the government of my country. But I do not want to be swayed by the political parties of the day. The gospel message is in danger of being ineffective when it gets co-opted for political gains. And here's a couple ways to know if politics has been co-opted in your life. Here they are. If you justify, rationalize, or downplay ungodly policy or practice to protect your political party, you are not stewarding your platform well. Let me say that one more time. If you justify, rationalize, or downplay ungodly policy or practice. To protect your political party, you are not stewarding your platform well. And I think this is so important for us as we head into, like, 2023 is going to be gone before we know, and then we head into another election year. And the way that Christians show up during that time will serve to either extend the gospel or diminish our effectiveness with the gospel in our context. Paul's conscience was clear. It's clear. You know why it was clear? Because he always strove. He always strove to fear God and not man. So appreciate that about Paul. If God said it, no matter how politically incorrect it was, he stood up for what God had to say. And he did what God wanted him to do. And I so appreciate that about him. His conscience was clear. Living blamelessly sets you up to use your platform as well. So as we walk in this culture we find ourselves in to live blamelessly before God, it actually bolsters the message that we have. It helps to serve the message that we have. And the third and final point today is this. Once you've evaluated your platform, once you've protected your platform, and protection is something you need to continue to do, once you've protected it, then you got to use your platform. You have to use it. You know what they say, use it or lose it, right? Use it or lose it. We have to be people who use the platform that God has given us. Rather than just going through the motions day in and day out, recognize God has you uniquely positioned in order to communicate the message. Use your platform. Two of the most powerful rulers in Rome were sitting in a room talking about the person and work of Jesus Christ. That is incredible to me. Why were they doing that? Because of the faithful witness of Paul. Don't ever underestimate your faithfulness with the gospel and what that will do in people's lives. Your platform is an opportunity for you to cast seed, to share the gospel with people, both in action and in word, in deed and in speech. We share the gospel with people, and our platform gives us an opportunity to cast the seed, and we don't know what's going to happen with that seed. We just don't know. It's our job to cast it out. As I was thinking about this, I remembered a friend of mine, Ben Ballone. We were in construction class together senior year. I built a house because I thought that was going to be more fun than anything else that I could have done at the high school. And I happened to be right. It was a lot of fun. But I'm on a job site with a bunch of other misfits, a bunch of other people who thought this was going to be more fun than that because we just weren't studious people. And you can only imagine what this job site sounded like. It was just a bunch of misfit teenagers. That's what it was, running around trying to figure life out. Lots of conversation about a bunch of ungodly things. And I knew that that was a platform for me to be resolute in my faith, to share the gospel with them, to live differently than them, just to be a different light to them. And one day, Ben Ballone, still a follower of Jesus today, comes up to me, almost like hesitantly. Like he's looking around. Does anybody see me talking to Nate? He comes up to me. He's like, hey, what's up, Ben? Do you think I could come to church with you? Absolutely, Ben. Why do you want to come to church with me? I don't know. There's just something about your life. And I look at my life and I just want what you got. So I was just wondering, can I come to church? Yeah, Ben, you can come to church. He comes to youth group with me that week. Later on, he tells me he shows up to youth group and he's stoned out of his mind because he was so nervous to walk through the doors. Ben said yes to Jesus that night. Radically changed his life. He still lives for the Lord today, 27 years later. And here I was just, I had no idea, just casting seed. I didn't know that one would fall in Ben's heart and begin to produce fruit in his life. And I think sometimes because we don't see the fruit in the moment, we stop casting the seed. You got to use your platform. Your platform's there so that you can cast the seed of the gospel, because you never know where that seed's going to land, who it's going to affect, and the change that's going to come about in their lives because you are a faithful messenger with the gospel. If we could have the worship team come at this time. When we recognize we have a platform, that we are influencers, we can use that platform to communicate the gospel. Again, so thankful for Brandon and the way he communicated that last week. You see, sometimes you can sit in a gathering like this and you can hear a message like this and you walk out feeling discouraged. Like, I'm just not doing enough. I'm not doing enough. That's not the way we want you to feel. We just want to let you know that God uses ordinary people just like you and just like me, doing ordinary things, just walking through life, but who have their eyes fixed a different way, recognizing they have a platform to communicate the gospel with the world around them. Like, you have a platform. You have an influence. And imagine the difference. Just think about, imagine the difference we would make if we, as followers of Jesus, prioritize the promotion of the gospel with the platforms we have been given. I think our families would look different. I think our neighborhoods would look different. I think our workplaces would look different. I think our day-to-day routines would look different because we'd go into them with purpose. God's given us a platform, and we have to steward them well. And we steward them well by evaluating them. We steward them well by protecting them, and we steward them well by using them. Would you stand to your feet this morning? Got some friends that are going to be up here in the front. If you need prayer this morning, they would love to spend some time praying with you before you go today. If you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, you want to talk about what it looks like to surrender your life to Him? Man, I'd love to chat with you before you leave today, or maybe the person that brought you, they're fully equipped to be able to talk to you about who Jesus is and what it looks like to surrender your life to Him. But this is what I'd say: don't leave this place without having a conversation. Don't exit out of this live stream without putting in the comments that you want to have a conversation about Jesus. Like, today's the day. Make a decision to follow Jesus. Our friends that are going to be up here to pray with you, they're more than capable of having a conversation with you about what it looks like to follow Jesus as well. And this is my hope, that all of us leave today's message and we leave it doing this, praying daily for the Holy Spirit to empower you with courage to use your platform. Every day, wake up. Jesus, today's a unique opportunity. It's a unique platform. Give me the courage to use it to spread the gospel. Father, thanks for this morning. Opportunity to open your word, to learn from it. I pray that you would challenge us and change us because of it. In your precious name, Jesus. Amen.
You can find new podcasts uploaded by Tuesday each week. We also stream our services live on YouTube and Facebook. We'd love to meet you. If you're able to come, you're always invited to our live services each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. On behalf of the Canvas Church team, I'd like to say thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.